Hello and welcome to The Crumb, a podcast from Bake From Scratch magazine. We're here to talk baking in all forms, the people, the culture, and the baked goods that make us run to preheat our oven. Hello and welcome to The Crumb. I'm Kyle Grace Mills, the associate editor of Bake From Scratch magazine.
And I'm Brian Hart Hoffman, the editor-in-chief of Bake From Scratch magazine. And I'm so excited we're back with more of our Better Baking Academy with Bob's Red Mill.
So this is our fifth module, and we're ushering in summer with a dessert that will be as fun to make as it is to eat. We're talking blueberry cornmeal galette. Galette is like a free-form tart where you fold your crust around a sweet or savory filling. So no, like, having to place it into a crust, hope it doesn't break. You just fold it over. No extra tools needed. This fruity version makes the most of peak season blueberries in a jammy filling. And then our tender galette crust is courtesy of Bob's Red Mill Organic All-Purpose Flour. And the delightfully crunchy, this is the secret, Bob's Red Mill Medium Grind Cornmeal. In our module, we're going to show you two ways to make the galette dough by hand and using a food processor, and how to transform one large galette into two smaller ones.
That's right. So we can first acknowledge that this module is being created and released during our continued time of social distancing and quarantining. So when we originally talked about doing a summer galette, we envisioned a really big, beautiful, and delicious blueberry and lemon galette with the cornmeal in the crust. And you can still make it. We created the recipe for the big version so that if you've got a large family or you just have a real hunger for a galette, make the big one. But then we realized we needed to adapt and downsize this to make two smaller galettes. And truthfully, you could take this dough and divide it into three or four and just make as small of a galette as you would like. That is the beautiful thing about galette baking. I really love the freedom you get from, you know, rolling and shaping and it not being absolutely perfect, and that rustic, beautiful crust and the filling that's just, it really does celebrate summer to me with endless possibilities.
Yeah, and you can stick this extra dough that you have into the freezer. It's good for at least a month.
Yeah.
And you can even make the filling a week ahead of time. I mean, everything's kind of make ahead. If you're saving this for something special, you can. I mean, it doesn't have to be made all that day. So it's one of those versatile recipes that we're all really in dire need of right now.
Well, I love that if you're entertaining and you've made the crust ahead of time and you've made the filling, how easy it is to assemble and bake so that it's served relatively, I don't want to say piping hot from the oven, but you can serve it fresh, which I think is when a galette is at its best. So there's a simplicity, yet a ease for entertaining or just having it, you know, when you're ready. And I'm going to full confess here. When we did the video portion of the Better Baking Academy and I was doing the in-kitchen demonstration for this galette, I had enough dough for four galettes. And I thought, I'll put it in the freezer. I'll come back and visit with this later. I'm going to make one over the weekend. I made all four in 2 days. I couldn't stop. I was serving it to family and friends that wanted a bite, and I was making small galettes, but I really fell in love with that cornmeal in the crust.
Yeah, it's a crunch and toothsomeness that you really love. I mean, just a little bit of a complexion to the texture that you're looking
for. Yeah, you notice
for.
It's there. So maybe at first you think like, ooh, there's bigger bits of the cornmeal. But then when you appreciate what it brings with that little bite and the flavor and the texture, I can't say enough about it, obviously. We could keep this conversation going.
So for our galette primer, we're bringing on Michelle Song, the baking blogger behind Studio Baked.
So Michelle has been inspiring us on Instagram and with her blog for years. And her recipes, to something I love, really celebrate global baked goods. So everything from Dutch crunch bread to bao buns and anything in between, that is such a signature thing of hers. And Kyle Grace, black sesame. She uses it a lot and you love it.
And so she loves milk bread as much as us. I think she might even love it as much as us.
I think so too.
And she's a trained pastry chef who's worked at Manresa Bread in Los Gatos and has brought her baking know-how to the blogosphere. I mean, she's all about bringing the teaching that she got to everybody else. And that's really helpful.
Well, we could sit here and talk about her for days because we have so much love for her. But let's stop and have a conversation with Michelle.
Hello, Michelle, and welcome to The Crumb.
Hi, thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here and to talk all things Galette with you too.
Oh, we are so excited to have you, and I'm even more excited to now hear your voice over a podcast recording, and one day we're going to plan an in-person baking meetup. So this is a perfect progression in our baking community meeting one another. So having you on the podcast is awesome. And as you know, we're big fans of your work and your imagery and just the style you bring to everything you bake.
Oh, thank you so much. The feeling is mutual. I can't wait to meet you in person one day, and we'll just have a baking marathon.
I know. I think now, after we've all experienced, you know, social distancing and quarantine measures and everything, now more than ever, I'm like, how can we plan these big meetups one day when it's safe and it's healthy and we can all be in one space together? So
let's open it up with some Galette talk. We know you have a soft spot for it. It's one of your favorites. What is it about the Galette that makes it such a delight to bake and serve?
Yes. So I love galettes. Like you said, they're one of my favorite things to bake. And if I'm being honest, I think I may like galettes more than pie.
I agree with you. I'm jumping in with a huge amen. I'm like, yes, I love she said that. I agree.
I mean, a galette is essentially a freeform pie, but they're so much easier to make. You don't need to blind bake. You don't need to par bake the crust. It's okay if you don't roll the dough out into a perfect circle or the exact diameter to fit into a pie plate. You don't need to trim, crimp, or make a decorative top. Galettes are meant to be rustic, and the beauty is in their imperfection, and I think each one has its own character and its own charm. But aside from that, I think one of the biggest reasons I love galettes so much is simply the crust-to-filling ratio. It's ideal because... I don't know about you, but I'm all about the flaky crust. It's my favorite part.
I'm like absolutely sitting here nodding my head with you. it's a pretty, I guess, now well-known fact that I am not a best friend to pie baking. I don't get excited by it. And I think that's why I haven't like really just gone like full down the pie baking like obsession. And if Aaron McDowell's listening, I apologize again for the fact that I still can't get the pie bug. But the galette situation is total joy for me. And I think it's like the things you just said about free form, and your diameter might not be the exact same every time, but then you get to that crust. And we all know that the ideal galette crust is flaky, buttery, and it can hold plenty of the fruit and juicy filling. Can you walk us through our listeners the process of making this ideal crust? And then let's talk about the tools they need to have on hand. And the list is pretty short. So go ahead. Let's talk about this crust.
Yeah. So before I dive into the process, when it comes to making a flaky crust, I just want to mention two key considerations when it comes to pastry dough. So time and temperature are really important. And what I mean by time is pastry dough isn't something you want to rush. After you've made the dough, you want to rest it and you want to chill it in the refrigerator. And this resting period will really help the gluten relax, and it'll make the dough easier to roll out. And it will also give the flour some time to properly hydrate and absorb the liquid. And then in addition to resting the dough, I also like to rest the assembled galette right before baking. And again, this will help the gluten relax and prevent the dough from shrinking, but it'll also give the ingredients time to chill and to firm up before going into the hot oven, which brings me to my next point about temperature. So when it comes to temperature, cold is the name of the game. You always want to start with cold ingredients, and I do this just by putting all the ingredients into the freezer for about 10 minutes prior to starting. So the butter and the fats like cream cheese should be chilled, and the liquid, if you're using water or milk or buttermilk, should be ice cold. And then if it's really hot during the summer, then I'll even chill the flour, and I just put the flour into a mixing bowl and then pop that into the fridge or the freezer. And the reason why temperature is so important is because when it comes to pastry dough, butter is the key to a flaky crust. So when the butter bakes, the moisture from the butter will create steam and then ultimately give us those flaky layers we're after. So we really want to keep the butter in large chunks and keep everything cold throughout the entire process. So time and temperature, those are the two most important things to think about when you're making a galette crust or even pie dough.
Excellent. I do the same thing. I especially start with a cold bowl. So my flour is usually in the bowl.
Ooh, and, that's
and
a good.
Yeah, I just think I'm typically a hot-handed person. So I know if I'm going to, you know, rub in the butter with my hands, I know I need to give it the best chance of keeping everything cold. So I start with a really cold metal bowl before I start working anything through yeah. it. So,
and I will say as a pro tip, have your butter cut in, if you have to like cut it into cubes or something, or you're adding it tablespoon at a time, cut it before you put it in the freezer, because once you pull it out of the freezer, you will bend some butter knives trying to cut in.
You've learned from experience.
This is personal experience. I promise you guys, I'm not thinking you're dumb. I'm knowing I was dumb. And I just want to help anybody who's feeling ambitious like I was.
I love that.
Okay, so we've got the cold bowl. So then tell us, like, the tools. I mean, you know, I use my hands for so many things. So,
yeah, so there's a few ways you can make a flaky galette crust. And I think the two main ways are either by hand or with a food processor. I personally prefer to make it by hand just because I hate cleaning all the attachments of the food processor. I just find it a pain. But I also find that making it by hand gives me a bit more control and will prevent me from overworking the dough too much, because when I use the food processor, I don't know, maybe I just get a little too trigger happy, but it's easy to get carried away by pulsing the butter in the food processor. But either way, whether you're using your hands or a food processor, both methods will yield a flaky crust. And when it comes to baking or cooking, just do what works best for you and use the tools that you have available to you, because everybody has their own way of doing things. And everybody, trust me, everybody will tell you their way is the right way. So if you don't have a food processor, then all you need are your two hands and a bowl. It's really that easy.
Yeah, that's what I love about it.
Yeah, to be the pro food processor person, the reason why, because I have also done hand method and I like it, you know, I've got longer fingernails, I am always wearing rings, it can be kind of, it's more intense to clean up my hands than it is for me to clean the food processor, which I also understand that, you know, but just as a pro food processor person.
Well, hey, it's great to have that other side of the coin.
Yeah. It's also really quick to just pulse it and just 1, 2, 3, then you're done.
Yeah, just a nice little easy, put it together and then put it in the fridge. So we kind of covered the crust. What about the filling? You know, what are some do's and don'ts behind making a proper galette filling? You know, does it need to be cooked beforehand? You know, can it go sweet, savory? What do you think about the filling?
Yeah, so I think the biggest issue when it comes to a galette is controlling the juices. Since it is a free-form pie, you don't really have the safety net of having the sides of a pie dish to keep the juices or the fruit inside. So you do want to use a thickener like cornstarch or tapioca starch to help thicken the filling. And then I would also advise against using a super wet and thin filling, maybe like a honey pie filling, because there are no walls to keep those juices inside, and it'll just take too long for the filling to set up while baking. Otherwise, you're going to have a mess in your oven, and the liquid is just going to be leaking everywhere.
Yeah, I actually had a friend ask me about using the galette method for a pie that had a very runny center, and they said, you know, if I build the walls and kind of, you know, form, you know, edges, I said, you're really asking for a disaster. So my advice that follows just what you said is, if you can scoop it and put it in the middle of the dough and it doesn't run to the edge within seconds, then you can form that galette crust to hold it. And having the thickener in the fruit filling is always, you know, you're going to regret if you don't do it. So, yeah, Michelle is right on with this one.
Yeah, I've tried pushing it with, I've made a pumpkin pie galette, and that was the wettest filling I would go. It was still pretty thick that I had it, but yeah, if you're doing like a honey pie or something like that that's really thin, don't try it.
Yeah, good advice from her. Then you've really got to make a pie. Force yourself to make that pie.
Yeah.
Okay, so the thing about a galette, too, is its endless versatility. So I always love freedom. I think bakers, sometimes we talk about, you know, baking as science and you've got to follow every step in a certain way. But I think with galettes in particular, you get that variety that gives a baker some freedom. For you, what are some of your favorite ways to play with it? Is sweet your favorite? Do you ever go savory? And then what are your recommendations for the different kind of fillings that people can make that aren't going to become that honey pie problem?
Right. So another way that you can control the juices is by the way you prepare the filling. So whether you prepare the filling, it's uncooked or macerated or half cooked or fully cooked. I think everybody knows the simplest and fastest method is just tossing the fruit with some sugar, lemon juice, and a thickener. And then right before you roll out the dough, you'll put it into the galette crust and then bake it up. But I wouldn't, if you're doing the uncooked method, I wouldn't do it too far in advance so you don't extract too many of the liquids or the juices from the fruit. So I would do it right before you're going to assemble. And then the other methods I use kind of depend on the type of fruit that I'm using. So when it comes to berries, I like to macerate the fruit with sugar, strain the juice, and then reduce the fruit juices, and then toss it with the fresh berries. And I just love this method because berries tend to be very juicy, but they also break down really easily. So I don't like to fully cook them. Or you could also half cook berries by just kind of cooking the berries just until they're jammy and then mix the jam with the fresh berries. And you guys do that in your blueberry galette recipe. So I love that. So you're getting the best of both worlds by having the jammy berries with the fresh berries. So they're not broken down too much. And then when it comes to stone fruit, like peaches or nectarines or cherries, I like to fully cook the filling. So stone fruits like peaches, they tend to be really juicy, but they're a little sturdier than berries, so they can be fully cooked before they go into the galette crust.
That's great advice. And, you know, I will say the blueberry filling that we used for this galette that's a part of the Better Baking Academy, I really love that jammy part of the blueberry lemon mixture, mm-hmm. but then I really love the pops of fresh blueberries that haven't been broken down and cooked. So giving yourself that like best of both worlds with, you know, amazing summer produce. So yeah, and I love what, you know, the versatility, using stone fruits, using, you know, fresh berries, and I mean it really is like summer's like favorite dessert should be a galette, right?
Yeah. No,
yeah, I mean
no, and I know you love to take it savory.
I mean, they're all year round.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Galettes are all year round. They're so versatile. And they can be sweet or savory. They're not just for dessert. So you could even make a galette for breakfast. You can make it for lunch or dinner. They make great appetizers, side dish, or the main dish. And there's two ways that I like to play with galettes. So I like to play with either the crust or the filling. So when I'm making the crust, I like to substitute flours or grains. So you can use a whole wheat flour. You can use ancient grains. Or you can sub in a portion of the flour with cornmeal, which is my personal favorite and also used in the galette crust for the blueberry galette. You can also sub in almond meal or ground nuts like walnuts or pistachios or hazelnuts to add a bit more texture and bite. And that works with both sweet or savory galettes. And then if I'm going savory, then sometimes I'll add a little Parmesan cheese or cheddar cheese or chopped fresh herbs like thyme or rosemary. You can also add spices like cinnamon and cardamom. So the possibilities are really endless when it comes to the crust, but also the same applies to the filling. So you can make it as simple or as fancy as you want. So if I'm feeling fancy or if I have guests that I want to impress, then sometimes I like to start with a base layer. So like a cream cheese or an almond frangipane, and then I'll add the fruit filling on top. Or if I'm going savory, then I'll start with an herby cheese layer, maybe some caramelized onions or maybe some pancetta or bacon crumbles. And then I'll top it with vegetables like sliced tomatoes or zucchini, which are perfect for summer. And right now I'm currently loving strawberries since it's strawberry season. So I just made a strawberry and balsamic galette with mascarpone.
Yum.
But galettes are perfect anytime. any time of year. They're the perfect canvas for showcasing, you know, the produce that's in season. So
yeah, you've definitely got us extremely excited over here. We were just, our eyes were kind of bugging out as you kept
we're
going.
We're looking at each other nodding. We're like, yes, yes, I'm making my Gillette list because
on.
Of you. Yeah.
No, and I tell you, even like some of, to take it in the simple form, I have done a spinach and artichoke dip filled Gillette
yum.
One time.
Okay.
And it, oh yeah, gosh. And it was already ready to go. The filling had the cream cheese in it, so it set up nicely. So, you know, sometimes you can also hack it. Like I made it for Super Bowl Sunday at the time, and I put it in the Gillette crust, but there's so many endless opportunities with it. But moving on from Gillette's, we also want to talk to you about your blog, Studio Baked. You know, you're a professionally trained pastry chef. You created your blog as a way to share some of the incredible things you learned. What are some of the recipes you've been most excited to share with followers?
So one of my favorite recipes is my Japanese milk bread, and I think that's obvious because I post it all the time. It also just happens to be one of my personal favorites. It's super soft, it's fluffy, and it's also really versatile. So you could make dinner rolls, you can make loaves, you can make it into a babka or a cinnamon roll. You name it. And you can also make it sweet or savory. So I have a recipe for my black sesame babka on my blog, but I've also made it savory by making it with pesto and cheese. So you can do anything with a Japanese milk bread. I love it.
I think we are all bakers separated at birth because Kyle Grace and I are both equally obsessed with milk bread. I bake milk bread for, it's my selfish, like if I get to pick what bread I'm going to bake, it's always a milk bread. I just did a four cheese pull apart that I am obsessed with. And Kyle Grace is obsessed with black sesame. So this is like the three of us truly with Team Gillette and now Team Milk Bread. I really feel like the alliance is getting stronger here. I share your passion and obsession.
Well, team carbs in general. I just love all carbs, so.
Yeah, right? We're just taking it to a whole other level.
It's a nation of comfort eaters right now, so I think we're in good company.
Yeah.
Yes.
So then,
I love seeing everybody's quarantine baking with all the sourdough and all the breads and all the carbs.
Yes. And, you know, I know people are frustrated by the shortages of flour and yeast and things. It's euphoric to see so many people baking, and then at the same time, so many people are wanting to bake, and they can't get in the kitchen and get the right ingredients. But I think it's also led to some solution-based baking. So you kind of find what you can and then, you know, seek recipes that apply. So on your blog,
Definitely. You
feature a ton of international flavors, which I love and do the same a lot in Bake From Scratch and other areas that I'm, you know, pursuing my baking interests. So speaking of your Japanese milk bread and Korean bao, where do you find your inspiration for these baked goods? And, you know, any bakers that you are inspired by that give you more of that international influence to, you know, create content for your blog?
Yeah, so I believe food is the ultimate connector, and I love exploring different cultures through food or even just learning more about my own Korean culture through food. Especially right now in quarantine, food is a great way to kind of transport yourself to another destination and recreate some of your favorite dishes you've had from your travels. I also love to research and look for different dishes that I've never had before, or I use food to reminisce on childhood favorites or recreate dying dishes. I just think food's so powerful, and it's definitely one of the reasons why I love food so much. So I just find inspiration everywhere.
Again, we're separated at birth here. I talk all the time about, you know, I started Bake From Scratch, not just as a baking magazine, but as a baking community that brings people together through food. I started baking when I was a flight attendant, and I was inspired by flavors that I was trying and things I was learning about around the world. And I wanted to recreate it at home for family and friends, and what it does to transport you through flavor. And I think right now, I've just experienced, and still am, the longest period of time that I've been home in 21 years since I started in the airline industry and then now in the media world. And the food and flavors have definitely been the comfort for me to try something new and to transport myself in the only way that I can, since we haven't been able to hop on airplanes and haven't been able to go and be out in the world. So I share that same passion with you about discovering culture and connecting people through the flavors we enjoy.
Yeah, food is definitely the ultimate connector.
All right. And to go off on one of our personal favorite things that you have brought to your blog is the Dutch crunch bread. Can you describe it to our listeners and tell us why everyone should be baking it? We know, but we want them to know.
Okay. Dutch crunch is seriously the best bread, and I will always have a soft spot in my heart for Dutch crunch. So if you're not familiar, Dutch crunch is also called tiger bread, or in some cases, it's also called giraffe bread. And it originated from the Netherlands. Surprise, surprise, Dutch crunch. and the name comes from its signature crust. So you mix together rice flour and yeast and water, and you make this paste, and then you smear it on top of the bread before it bakes. And then it cracks and creates this buttery, crispy crust that looks like giraffe spots or tiger stripes. And it is so good. It's one of my favorite breads. I grew up on it, and I would order a turkey avocado on Dutch crunch bread from my local bakery every week. But it seems to only be a thing in the Bay Area where I grew up. I can't even find it in San Diego. So it's just a Bay Area thing, I guess. And then again, in the Netherlands. And I know that they have it in England, too.
It's funny where things pop up. And then, you know, you grew up eating something that, you know, I don't know, you probably assumed everyone had the access to it, or maybe it was in bakeries, you know, throughout the country or the world. And then when you learn, like, wow, the Bay Area has this thing that, you know, the Netherlands shares, and then a few other places. And when you describe it, I mean, you know, it kind of gives me that Mexican concha, like the crunch on the soft bread feeling,
yeah,
but
top.
Just, yeah. So it's like that addiction to that crunchy streusel or sugary, you know, crunch on top. But then obviously with this Dutch crunch giving you that giraffe, you know, pattern on the bread, which you do it so beautifully. Your imagery definitely makes me want to bake it time and time again.
It is so good. I highly recommend it.
Well, there's
Everybody
the best endorsement, right?
Yeah,
when you say how much you love it and it came from something in your childhood and you want people to bake it over and over like you do, that's the endorsement that everyone needs. You know, if you create it and then you don't turn back to it time and time again, it might not have been the favorite. So we're glad it's on your top list, too.
Yes, but it needs to become a thing everywhere else except, you know, just not in the Bay Area. Everybody needs to have Dutch crunch. So I feel like I'm campaigning for Dutch crunch bread.
Well, Kyle Grace, I think we should add this to a magazine feature and let's take it to a bigger...
Origin of a classic.
Yeah, let's join up with Michelle for this. We're going to partner in taking Dutch crunch all over the world.
Yes, I love it.
Well, thank you so much for this chat, Michelle. We have learned a lot about galette making and even more about your amazing international food process. And we can't wait to look at what you come out with next and get on your blog and see the next Dutch crunch bread.
And you've given me the list today of like galette inspiration. I already love it, but just hearing you talk and your variations, and now I'm going to drop into your DMs on Instagram and be like, okay, give me that list one more time of some of those savory options. It's definitely time, you know, with the summer produce and everything, to get in the kitchen and bake galette. And we are so thankful you've joined us in the Better Baking Academy with Bob's Red Mill and just being a huge part of our baking community. It's been such a pleasure to chat with you, Michelle.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I've been having so much fun talking about galettes and bread and carbs.
I know.
My favorite topic to talk about.
Well, come back to the crumb anytime. We love to talk about baking, and we'll definitely schedule another follow-up conversation.
I look forward to it. And we got to schedule our baking marathon
Yes.
once we're out of quarantine.
Yes, an in-person baking event. We're going to do it. I can't wait.
Yes.
All right. Thanks so much, Michelle, and have a good one.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
You know, I really learned something about you, Kyle Grace. Team food processor with your galette.
It is a very controversial position, especially within my family. My mother has a food processor phobia. She will not clean it. She will not do any of that. She has one three times as nice as me and won't use it. And I try to steal it every visit home, but she likes to keep it and hold it over
me. So it's like, yeah. Mm-hmm. But I have a food processor and I use it when necessity calls. It's not my favorite thing to have in the kitchen. And to be honest, it's in a closet and I have to go get it for the opportunity to use it. But with Galette, I mean, I understand your fingernails. I understand. I love making the dough by hand. So today I learned something that separates
us. It's amazing what my vanity will make me do, honestly.
Hey, but it bakes the same, and that's the beautiful thing about it. And I hope everyone listening knows that we are here to support your baking adventures and Michelle bringing us her knowledge and her love of Galette baking, too, is just something that I appreciate. And, you know, I've really loved the modules that we've been working on with Bob's Red Mill, and I'm learning stuff along the way, too. So I hope that everyone's enjoying it just as much as I am.
Yeah, just as a reminder, you can sign up for the Better Baking Academy on our website, bakefromscratch.com. And don't miss out on all the other parts of the module that we have. Obviously, we've got our webpage and a PDF you can print out. And we also have Instagram TV video of Brian making each of these modules so that to kind of walk you through the process visually. Obviously, you get to listen to us, but it helps to actually see you getting walked through the process as well.
Well, and for this module, we changed locations because we had been doing video in a more studio kitchen space. But for this module, I am in my home kitchen. So it is live and in person with me baking this blueberry cornmeal galette. And I love it and hope that everyone will bake along with me and enjoy hanging out in my kitchen virtually as we can. And everyone, thank you so much for listening today and for joining us for another episode of The Crumb. And we wish you happy baking and better baking with Bob's Red Mill.
If you liked our podcast, please rate, subscribe, and tell a friend about us. To keep up with all of our baking endeavors, follow our editor-in-chief and co-host, Brian, on Instagram at Brian Hart Hoffman. You can follow Bake From Scratch on Instagram at The Bake Feed. For online recipes and fresh baking content, go to our website, bakefromscratch.com, and sign up for our newsletter, Preheat. Finally, for in-real-life baking inspiration, grab our magazine on newsstands or subscribe through our website.